Chapter 70. James Crawley's pipe is put out, the amiable behavior of Mr. Crawley, and Lady Jane's kind reception of her, highly flattered Miss Briggs, who was unable to speak a good word for the latter, after the cards of the Southdown family had been presented to Miss Crawley. A countess's card left personally to for her, Briggs, was not a little pleasing to the poor friendless companion. What could Lady Southdown mean by leaving a card upon you, I wonder, Miss Briggs? Said the Republican Miss Crawley, upon which the companion meekly said that she hoped there could be no harm in a lady of rank taking notice of a poor gentlewoman, and she put away this card in her workbox amongst her most cherished personal treasures. Furthermore, Miss Briggs explained how as he had met Mr. Crawley walking with his cousin and long affianced bride the day before, and she told how kind and gentle-looking the lady was, and what a plain, not to say common, dress as he had, all the articles of which, from the bonnet down to the boots, she described and estimated with female accuracy. Miss Crawley allowed Briggs to prattle on without interrupting her too much. As she got well, she was pining for society. Mr. Creamer, her medical man, would not hear of her returning to her old haunts and dissipation in London. The old spinster was too glad to find any companionship at Brighton, and not only were the cards acknowledged the very next day, but Pitt Crawley was graciously invited to come and see his aunt. He came, bringing with him Lady Southdown and her daughter. The dowager did not say a word about the state of Miss Crawley's soul, but talked with much discretion about the weather, about the war and the downfall of the monster Bonaparte, and above all, about doctors, quacks, and the particular merits of Dr. Podgers, whom she then patronized. During their interview, Pitt Crawley made a great stroke, and one which showed that, had his diplomatic career not been blighted by early neglect, he might have risen to a high rank in his profession. When the Countess Dowager of Southdown fell foul of the Corsican upstart, as the fashion was in those days, and showed that he was a monster stained with every conceivable crime, a coward and a tyrant not fit to live, one whose fall was predicted, and see, Pitt Crawley suddenly took up the cudgels in favor of the man of destiny. He described the First Consul as he saw him at Paris at the Peace of Amiens, when he, Pitt Crawley, had the gratification of making the acquaintance of the great and good Mr. Fox, a statesman whom, however much he might differ with him, it was impossible not to admire fervently, a statesman who had always had the highest opinion of the Emperor Napoleon. And he spoke in terms of the strongest indignation of the faithless conduct of the Allies towards this dethroned monarch, who, after giving himself generously up to their mercy, was consigned to an ignoble and cruel banishment, while a bigoted popish rabble was tyrannizing over France in his stead. This orthodox horror of Romish superstition saved Pitt Crawley in Lady Southdown's opinion, whilst his admiration for Fox and Napoleon raised him immeasurably in Miss Crawley's eyes. Her friendship with that defunct British statesman was mentioned when we first introduced her in this history. A true Whig, Miss Crawley had been in opposition all through the war, and though, to be sure, the downfall of the Emperor did not very much agitate the old lady, or his ill treatment tend to shorten her life or natural rest, yet Pitt spoke to her heart when he lauded both her idols, and by that single speech made immense progress in her favor. And what do you think, my dear? Miss Crawley said to the young lady, for whom as he had taken a liking at first sight, as she always did for pretty and modest young people, though it must be owned her affections cooled as rapidly as they rose. Lady Jane blushed very much, and said that she did not understand politics, which she left to wiser heads than hers. But though Mama was, no doubt, correct, Mr. Crawley had spoken beautifully. And when the ladies were retiring at the conclusion of their visit, Miss Crawley hoped Addie Southdown would be so kind as to send her Lady Jane sometimes, if she could be spared to come down and console a poor sick lonely old woman. This promise was graciously accorded, and they separated upon great terms of amity. Don't let Lady Southdown come again, Pitt, said the old lady. She is stupid and pompous, like all your mother's family, whom I never could endure. But bring that nice good-natured little Jane as often as ever you please. Pitt promised that he would do so. He did not tell the Countess of Southdown what opinion his aunt had formed of her ladyship, who, on the contrary, thought that as he had made a most delightful and majestic impression on Miss Crawley. And so, nothing loth to comfort a sick lady, and perhaps not sorry in her heart, to be freed now and again from the dreary spouting of the Reverend Bartholomew Irons, and the serious toadies who gathered round the footstool of the pompous Countess, her mama, Lady Jane became a pretty constant visitor to Miss Crawley, accompanied her in her drives, and solaced many of her evenings. She was so naturally good and soft, that even Firkin was not jealous of her, and the gentle Briggs thought her friend was less cruel to her, when kind Lady Jane was by. Towards her ladyship Miss Crawley's manners were charming. The old spinster told her a thousand anecdotes about her youth, talking to her in a very different strain from that in which as he had been accustomed to converse with the godless little Rebecca. For there was that in Lady Jane's innocence which rendered light-talking impertinence before her, and Miss Crawley was too much of a gentlewoman to offend such purity. The young lady herself had never received kindness except from this old spinster, and her brother and father. And she repaid Miss Crawley's endowment by artless sweetness and friendship. In the autumn evenings, when Rebecca was flaunting at Paris, the gayest among the gay conquerors there, and our Amelia, our dear wounded Amelia, where was she? Lady Jane would be sitting in Miss Crawley's drawing room singing sweetly to her, in the twilight, her little simple songs and hymns, while the sun was setting, and the sea was roaring on the beach. The old spinster used to wake up when these ditties ceased, and ask for more. As for Briggs, and the quantity of tears of happiness which she now shed as she pretended to knit, and looked out at the splendid ocean darkling before the windows, and the lamps of heaven beginning more brightly to shine, who, I say, can measure the happiness and sensibility of Briggs? Pitt, meanwhile, in the dining room, with a pamphlet on the corn laws, or a missionary register by his side, took that kind of recreation which suits romantic and unromantic men after dinner. He sipped Madeira, built castles in the air, thought himself a fine fellow, felt himself much more in love with Jane than he had been any time these 7 years, during which their liaison had lasted without the slightest impatience on Pitt's part, and slept a good deal. When the time for coffee came, Mr. Bowles used to enter in a noisy manner, and summon Squire Pitt, who would be found in the dark very busy with his pamphlet. I wish, my love, I could get somebody to play picket with me, Miss Crawley said one night, when this functionary made his appearance with the candles and the coffee. Poor Briggs can no more play than an owl, she is so stupid. The spinster always took an opportunity of abusing Briggs before the servants, and I think I should sleep better if I had my game. At this Lady Jane blushed to the tips of her little ears, and down to the ends of her pretty fingers, and when Mr. Bowles had quitted the room, and the door was quite shut, she said, Miss Crawley, I can play a little. I used to play a little with poor dear papa. Come and kiss me. Come and kiss me this instant, you dear good little soul, cried Miss Crawley in an ecstasy. And in this picturesque and friendly occupation Mr. Pitt found the old lady and the young one, when he came upstairs with him pamphlet in his hand. How she did blush all the evening, that poor Lady Jane! It must not be imagined that Mr. Pitt Crawley's artifices escaped the attention of his dear relations at the rectory at Queen's Crawley. Hampshire and Sussex lie very close together, and Mrs. Bute had friends in the latter county who took care to inform her of all, and a great deal more than all, that passed at Miss Crawley's house at Brighton. Pitt was there more and more. He did not come for months together to the hall, where his abominable old father abandoned himself completely to rum and water, and the odious society of the Horrocks family. Pitt's success rendered the rector's family furious, and Mrs. Butte regretted more, though she confessed less, than ever her monstrous fault in so insulting Miss Briggs, and in being so haughty and parsimonious to Bowles and Firkin, that she had not a single person left in Miss Crawley's household to give her information of what took place there. Tea was all Butte's collarbone, she persisted in saying, if that had not broke, I never would have left her. I am a martyr to duty, and to your odious unclerical habit of hunting, Butte. Hunting, nonsense. It was you that frightened her, Barbara, the divine interposed. You're a clever woman, but you've got a devil of a temper, and you're a screw with your money, Barbara. You'd have been screwed in gal, Butte, if I had not kept your money. I know I would, my dear, said the rector, good-naturedly. Why, you are a clever woman, but you manage too well, you know. And the pious man consoled himself with a big glass of port. What the deuce can she find in that spoonie of a Pitt Crawley, he continued. He fellow has not pluck enough to say bo to a goose. I remember when Rawdon, who is a man, and be hanged to him, used to flog him round the stables as if he was a whipping top. And Pitt would go howling home to his ma, ha, ha. Why, either of my boys would whop him with one hand. Jim says he's remembered at Oxford as Miss Crawley still the spoonie. I say, Barbara, his reverence continued, after a pause. What? Said Barbara, who was biting her nails and drumming the table. I say, why not send Jim over to Brighton to see if he can do anything with the old lady? He's very near getting his degree, you know. He's only been plucked twice, so was I, but he's had the advantages of Oxford and a university education. He knows some of the best chaps there. He pulls stroke in the bony face boat. He's a handsome feller. Deed, ma'am, let's put him on the old woman, hey, and tell him to thrash Pitt if he says anything. Ha, ha, ha. Jim might go down and see her, certainly, the housewife said, adding with a sigh, if we could but get one of the girls into the house, but she could never endure them, because they are not pretty. Those unfortunate and well-educated women made themselves heard from the neighboring drawing room, where they were thrumming away, with hard fingers, an elaborate music piece on the piano forte, as their mother spoke. And indeed, they were at music, or at backboard, or at geography, or at history, the whole day long. But what avail all these accomplishments, in Vanity Fair, to girls who are short, poor, plain, and have a bad complexion? Mrs. Butte could think of nobody but the curate, to take one of them off her hands, and Jim coming in from the stable at this minute, through the parlor window, with a short pipe stuck in his oilskin cap, he and his father fell to talking about odds on the St. Leger, and the colloquy between the rector and his wife ended. Mrs. Butte did not augur much good to the cause from the sending of her son James as an ambassador, and saw him depart in rather a despairing mood. Nor did the young fellow himself, when told what his mission was to be, expect much pleasure or benefit from it, but he was consoled by the thought that possibly the old lady would give him some handsome remembrance of her, which would pay a few of his most pressing bills at the commencement of the ensuing Oxford term, and so took his place by the coach from Southampton, and was safely landed at Brighton on the same evening. With his portmanteau, his favorite bulldog Tozer, and an immense basket of farm and garden produce, from the dear rectory folks to the dear Miss Crawley. Considering it was too late to disturb the invalid lady on the first night of his arrival, he put up at an inn, and did not wait upon Miss Crawley until a late hour in the noon of next day. James Crawley, when his aunt had last beheld him, was a gawky lad, at that uncomfortable age, when the voice varies between an unearthly treble and a preternatural bass, when the face not uncommonly blooms out with appearances for which Roland's calendar is said to act as a cure, When boys are seen to shave furtively with their sister's scissors, and the sight of other young women produces intolerable sensations of terror in them. When the great hands and ankles protrude a long way from garments which have grown too tight for them. When their presence after dinner is at once frightful to the ladies, who are whispering in the twilight in the drawing room, and inexpressibly odious to the gentlemen over the mahogany, who are restrained from freedom of intercourse and delightful interchange of wit by the presence of that gawky innocence. When, at the conclusion of the second glass, Papa says, "Jack, my boy, go out and see if the evening holds up," and the youth, willing to be free, yet hurt at not being yet a man, quits the incomplete banquet. James, then a bad boy, was now become a young man, having had the benefits of a university education, and acquired the inestimable polish which is gained by living in a fast set at a small college, and contracting debts, and being rusticated, and being plucked. He was a handsome lad, however, when he came to present himself to his aunt at Brighton, and good looks were always a title to the fickle old lady's favor. Nor did his blushes and awkwardness take away from it. She was pleased with these healthy tokens of the young gentleman's ingenuousness. He said he had come down for a couple of days, to see a man of his college, and to pay my respects to you, ma'am, and my father's and mother's, who hope you are well. Pitt was in the room with Miss Crawley when the lad was announced, and looked very blank when his name was mentioned. The old lady had plenty of humor, and enjoyed her correct nephew's perplexity. She asked after all the people at the rectory with great interest, and said she was thinking of paying them a visit. She praised the lad to his face, and said he was well grown, and very much improved, and that it was a pity his sisters had not some of his good looks, and finding, on inquiry, that he had taken up his quarters at an hotel, would not hear of his stopping there, but bade Mr. Bowles send for Mr. James Crawley's things instantly. "And harkee, Bowles," she added, with great graciousness, "you will have the goodness to pay Mr. James' bill." She flung Pitt a look of arch triumph, which caused that diplomatist almost to choke with envy. Much as he had ingratiated himself with his aunt, as he had never yet invited him to stay under her roof, and here was a young whippersnapper, who at first sight was made welcome there. "I beg your pardon, sir," says Bowles, advancing with a profound bow. "What oddle, sir, shall Thomas fetch the luggage from?" "Oh, damn," said young James, starting up, as if in some alarm, "I'll go." "What?" said Miss Crawley. "The Tom Cribb's Arms," said James, blushing deeply. Miss Crawley burst out laughing at this title. Mr. Bowles gave one abrupt guffaw, as a confidential servant of the family, but choked the rest of the volley. The diplomatist only smiled. I didn't know any better," said James, looking down. I've never been here before. It was the coachman told me. The young storyteller. The fact is, that on the Southampton coach, the day previous, James Crawley had met the Tutbury Pet, who was coming to Brighton, to make a match with the Ratingdean Fibber, and enchanted by the Pet's conversation, had passed the evening in company with that scientific man and his friends, at the inn in question. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.